This tape recording is copyright 1956 by the Hubbard Association of Scientologists International of Brunswick House, 83 Palace Gardens Terrace, London, West 8, United Kingdom. It is Reel 8 of the Hubbard Professional College Lecture Series of August 1956. Its title is Start, Change, and Stop.
The subject of this lecture is the entrance of rough cake. What is the lowest entrance point which we have today? That lowest point is pretty low. And oddly enough, it is the same for low cake as it is for high cake. And we have achieved that optimum whereby using the technique does not criticize the frequency. Once upon a time, we had a technique that we used on psychos. We'd say, look around the room and find something real. A psycho would. He would eventually discover something real, touch it to his bosom, and so on. It would just work once. There'd just be one or two items that he would find quite real, and he would be very pleased. Very pleased. So that people knew it. And quickly would come in, sit down, or she'd say, all right, now, look around the room and find something real. They'd say, oh, you think I'm crazy, huh? Now, that won't happen today for the excellent reason that I wouldn't care if somebody walked in and said he was an operating Satan, or if somebody walked in on somebody else's scene, or was carried in with a stretcher straight from the local spin bin, and running pretty closely on the same processes. Only one procedure that would be lower than the procedures I'm talking about. It would be a highly specialized procedure having to do with an individual who had lost the use of his voice, his sight, or his hearing, or his capability of moving his hands. Such pre-clear has to be processed with some rather interesting flights of fancy on the part of the auditor. Communication on somebody who's lying in an apparently comatose state is very difficult to establish. And it is quite often established by tactile, and you press their wrist, and you just tell them, I'm going to press your wrist here and see if you're in good communication with me. And you notice occasionally he flicks his eye or something like that. And you say, now, when I press your wrist, I want you to flick your eye if you felt that touch. And the fellow flicked his eye. In other words, he's been lying there ostensibly in a comatose state, whereas in actuality, he has been quite alert. He is still there. He is simply unable to move very much of his body. Most of the people who are in comas in hospitals are actually in this state. So there is a level where the establishment of communication is quite difficult. And it becomes quite necessary for the auditor to become extremely inventive in order to establish communication in the first place. But as nearly as he could, he would still follow these procedures. As nearly as he could. The lowest process, which would be addressed to any case, would simply be the first process of SLPA, which is not, as we were saying before, find the pre-clear, find the auditor, find the walls, but the process which leads the pre-clear to find the pre-clear, find the auditor, and find the walls. He's got one lower than that. And this is an interesting process, since it is in itself such a simplicity that an auditor will undoubtedly believe there must be much more to it. And so believing will probably try to complicate it. But it in itself is capable of producing a full result. And that process we are calling SCS, to keep our tongues from being tired out, and saying start, change, and stop. Now, start, change, and stop, of course, is the anatomy of control. Control consists of start, change, and stop. This is a cycle of action. There are other little midpoints on a large cycle of action, but one, I suppose, could get very fancy and play these little midpoints down. There are actually two change points and a null point in the middle of the curve. It actually goes start, change, continue, change, stop. There's a continue there on the middle of the curve. It is survival itself. What I don't know how we would run continue unless we would ask the individual to simply get out. And someday somebody may find this a therapeutic, but I myself am not an athletic type. When I go for walks, I take a motorcycle. And it would have to be somewhat on this basis. You would tell somebody that he had to keep walking as long as he could keep walking. Now, I have seen that one process, by the way, break a psychosis. So it obviously has some workability. But in the auditing realm, as far as we're concerned, we're going to run start, change, and stop. And three things are run not one after the other, but each one flat. And then another one is picked up. In other words, we run, let us say, change first, and we run it until the individual is not for any particular reason, but most speakers are in an obsessive change. We run change pretty flat. You know, so he's no longer commenting on it. And then we pick up start, and we run this start very flat. We do it many, many times, and then we're satisfied that this isn't producing an immediate change on the case. So we run stop, and we do this many, many times, and that's apparently flat. And it would be a vast mistake at that point to say this process is flat. It is finished. This individual is under the auditor's control for the excellent reason that if you ran change again, you would find further consideration shifting in the free clear. And then if you ran start, which a little while ago was flat, you would discover once more that it was not flat, but it had unflattened somehow in running stop and change again. And so you would run start some more, and that would flatten once more, and then you would run stop and flatten stop again. Now, it would not be possible to say, since we're taking this for any level of case, it would not at all be possible for us to say how long you'd have to run the process. I can tell you that one of the rougher processes would be this one, run on somebody who was total machinery and who had never been in session. This would really be standing his hair on end. It would be quite a process. He would consider this, and on a case that was in a very, very good condition, was well upscale, and so on, he would consider it interesting, and he would exteriorize much better. The end result of the process, if continued long enough, is exteriorization. If a person is obsessively exteriorized, or you say inverted, it is probable that his inversion would suddenly be noticeable to him. You know, a person who can't get in his head, a person who is compulsively out of his head. And we would get a condition there where he would become aware of being outside of his head and not able to get into it. And as we went along, he would probably slide back into his head. And he might complain because it's now gone all black. Satan's become very puzzled as to why they can't see out of head, you know. They think all brains should be transparent. And the whole science of psychology, if you want to call it the science, is devoted to proving that not only are brains not transparent, but they are totally opaque. And that's why we call it the science of opacity. The one study of psychology is the brain, by the way. It's a physiological study, so don't ever get it mixed up with some other field. It belongs there. Somebody should study the brain. They have enough of them in cases and things like that, so it'd be a shame if somebody didn't study them. Now, although what it has to do with making a body move, I have not quite been able to discover. But anyway, we have the person going inside his head and then coming out again. Only this time he can get out if he wants to. See, so there are three conditions which you meet, which is buttered all over the universe. My God, where am I at now? That's the type of case, that's the technical name for it, but my God, where am I at case. He isn't in his body, he isn't out of his body, he doesn't have a body, there isn't any body, because there are no walls, because there's no universe, but he's being calm about it. And this case, run on SPS, would gradually accumulate to himself a considerable ability, you see, to collect himself. And the first thing he's liable to find out after he's totally collected, and by the way, this might not occur until you've done about 5, 6, 8, 10, maybe even more hours of auditing than that on him, this process, you would find that he would get collected somewhere and he would find out that he was away from that horrible thing there. Thank heaven. What you have done for me, what you've done for me, you have assured me that I am no longer near that hateful, detestable, horrible thing, a body. Of course, if you at this time took his gratitude as meaningful and didn't do anything more about it, he would then merely be obsessively exterior. But if you went on, he would probably not thank you, but he would slide in closer and closer to this body, and the next thing you know, be in its head, and then be in its head for a while, complaining bitterly, and then the complaint would wear off, either by going into apathy or improving in tone. And he would come up, and then he'd begin to tell you, well, it's not so bad, really. I don't feel any bugs crawling on me while I'm in here. And gradually it would improve his tone and then be able to exteriorize. But this time we wouldn't expect him to exteriorize and discover that he was exteriorized nearly so much as we would expect him to inform the auditor that he was directing the change or the start or the stop of the body from an exterior point in the room. And if we continued the process even further, we would find he was doing it by postulate and not by beam or energy manifestation. He looked at the body and he'd tell it to move, you know, and it moved. Like an animal trainer putting something through whip, you know. We would have an interesting state there whereby somebody could do that. Such a person is a dangerous person. They are social. They do not start fights at the drop of the hat, always. They are very seldom found in jail. They do not contribute to the payrolls of large institutions because they don't occupy them. They probably are less willing to let somebody else play the game too. In other words, they're undesirable people. They do not enter into the spirit of the thing here on earth, which is chop everybody up. Because they are so choppable, because if I don't, they'll chop me. Usually in famous English. And they might see a larger game. They might see a third dynamic game or even a fourth dynamic game going on. And they might even get the idea someday that man ought to get together and fight the enemies of man, not the enemies that man thinks men are. You might even get them up to this point. You understand? Now, we unfortunately get unserious about the conditions of existence if you bring in that far. You cannot convince them that they ought to do something about it right this minute. That's a very difficult thing people understand. They come to you and they say, somebody who is pretty clear, and why doesn't he do this and that if he can do things so wonderfully? So you send him over to Russia to bump off Krishnev or Bolte or something, and you say, all right, that's fine. And he says, sure, I'll do that for you. That's good, good. And you see him the next day, and you haven't read any headlines at all. And you say, what happened? So, you know, it's a funny thing. I was over there, and there was a lady washing clothes. You know how you wash clothes in Russia? And you say, come on now, didn't you do anything on this project at all? And he'll say, oh, yes, I looked the situation over. But didn't you knock them off? And he says, why? He says, isn't there a nice game going on between England and Russia? I mean, you want to stop the whole thing? This is very dangerous. Well, what's the most that could happen? Come on now, tell me. What's the most that could happen? That the countries would both get wiped out, you'd say. Oh, well, he said, if it ever came to that, he said we could fix that up. But I don't see anybody with enough sense to push the right button if they did, you know. They did get mad at each other. Very hard to convince. His level of trust is up, which is one of the best arguments I know of, by the way, in the direction of believing that God isn't always going to give you that six-shooter you think you need in order to settle your offense. I mean, I see people down here in the church praying, and I often ask them what they're praying about, I've had in the past, and so forth. And, you know, I have a grave suspicion that an operating Satan like the eighth dynamic just wouldn't be really intrigued with it if he heard it at all. Because it's in the light of, you must play this petty two-bit little game. You know, you must give me great strength in order to smite mine enemy, the cloth seller, who gypped me on my commission. No, you just couldn't get somebody like that interested in this sort of thing. Of course, it would be a very vicious thing for us to unsell the world on this idea, because think of the income we would lose to the Catholic Church. Anyway, and they do need income. They do. People like that can't generate energy and enthusiasm. They have to buy it. Anyway, now you think that's a dirty crack about Catholicism. I'm mad at Catholicism. I'm not mad at Catholicism. It doesn't exist anymore. Just call Catholicism. When we get a technique, which with this and sufficient variation, of course, to keep Sprinkler from being bored stiff, which will run all the way up on an exteriorization, we're really pretty well there on a technique. Well, why wouldn't it go all the way up? Why would you have to do any other technique but this technique? Well, the main thing is the tension span. A preclear who is in pretty bad condition has a very poor attention span. Very poor. He actually comes off of a process after a few minutes, and it's just a contest of getting him into session. He slides out of session, he gets into session, he slides out of session. And you really should vary the randomity just a little bit in order to keep him interested. Although you would be surprised how absorbably interested a preclear can be very often in this process. All right. His response is not particularly important. His response, his actual response, is not terribly important to the technique. Just get him to do it. Get him to do it. Discuss with him what is happening. But what is happening? He has had control itself as a group thing. The word control is an abstract. Don't you see? It's an abstract. We had to find the composite points of the abstract, which were solidly contactable, in order to have the abstract. So somebody says to him, why don't you control yourself? Well, he can't. It's an abstract. It doesn't have much sense. Really doesn't have much sense, you know. It has a little sense that people have begun to believe that there's very bad control extant in the world. Well, there is no such a thing as bad control, but there is such a thing as unpositive control. See, that would be bad control. Like we tell the preclear, let's walk over towards the door. I didn't say that. I meant the window. I said walk. I didn't say run. Why aren't you running? Why don't you say something? Shut up. See, this is what we used to call bad AC. He isn't giving the preclear a chance or the person a chance to execute a command before he interjects another command. And that is the definition of confusion. Good control is not bad. Good control is simply positive control within the tolerance of the individual being controlled. See? He has to know he's being controlled, and he has to be able to tolerate the level of control. For instance, if you picked up a body and threw it across the street against the wall, you would find out that it would be slightly secondhand. Now, it's very positive you're picking up the body and throwing it across the street, but it was damaging to the body, so therefore that could also come under the heading of bad control because it's not within the tolerance of the body. You understand? And remember, when a person has been ill, that to walk back and forth across the floor may also be outside the tolerance of the body. So we get a lower, slightly lower level technique here in moving an object, and we let them sit down comfortably so they won't fall down, and we let them shift an object. Now, it's always safest if you just have a complete stranger on your hands, as far as the case is concerned, to shift the object. And it's always a safe thing to do, in any case, if you're sounding out the case at large. If the individual is oblivious to the body, and the body is not at all real to him, and an object is real to him, he, of course, would use the object. You see that? But a blind man would have greater reality on the body than he would have on the object. So which is the lower technique there? The body is the lower technique, of course. And this is a very plain, ordinary, usual, run-of-the-mill sort of a process. You would have to, it's almost unbelievable in its simplicity. It's one of these where both the auditor and the preacher should be standing, because this is better mimicry. The auditor should guide the preclear around slightly, not by touching him very much, but occasionally, tracking his attention with the tap on the elbow. This gives you reality. See, there's a reality there. And we would run it on this basis. We would say to the preclear, standing in here. So you see that spot there. We'll call that forehead. All right? And there, now you stand there. Now you see that other spot over there? We call that spot B. Now you see that spot? He says, yes. And you say, good. All right. Now, when I tell you to change the body's position, I want you to move from spot A to spot B. He understands that. And you say, all right, change the body's position. And he moves it from A over to B. And you say, good, that's fine, that's fine. Now, at first, with the case we're having a rough time, you wouldn't ask him this. But normally it would be usual for you to say, did you change the body's position? And he'll have to think this over for a moment, and he will give you his answer, regardless of what it is. You say, fine, that's good. And now, you see that spot over there? Now, we call that spot C. We've got three spots so that we won't run a duplicative process on him, you see? C. All right. Now, when I tell you to change the body's position, I want you to move the body from spot B to spot C. Now, you understand that? And please say yes. And you say, all right, change the body's position. And he changed the body's position from B to C. And you say, well, did you change the body's position? He says, yes. You say, all right, now you see this spot over here, which we will call spot A. And you understand we're not dragging any process into the past. Each time we make a contract with Preacher, we're not depending on any former understanding with this process. Each moment in time is new. We make each level of time a new level of time. So he doesn't have to depend on his memory. After a while, he'll just he'll just relax. He doesn't have to remember. He's not running a skill here, you see. It's not a new thing he's learning to do. So you want to confuse him from that, and the best way to do it is say you see this spot A, which we will call A here. All right. Now, when I ask you to change the position of the body, I wish you to move it over there to that spot, which we will call B. You see that spot over there? That's B. All right. Now, you got that? And he says, yes. And you say, all right, change the body's position. He moves it over there to B. You understand that? Now, that's the way you do it. That's all there is to it, of the change phase. Now, on start, we simply emphasize start. There's the pre-clear standing there. And we say, now, you see the wall over there? And he says, yes. Now, when I give you this command, I want you to move the body in that direction. Now, when I say start, in other words, we just hit him. When I say start, I want you to start the body. He says, all right, that's fine. You say, all right, stop. And he starts moving the body. And you say, that's fine. Now, he's liable to tell you something daffy like, you know, I had to stop it and change it too. And you say, yes, I know that. Well, that's fine. You did start the body, though, didn't you? And he says, yes, I did start the body, but I also stopped it, and so forth. What's happening here? You're watching the word control ungroup. You're getting these separate motions apart. And as you get them apart and get them distinct one from another, of course, an individual's ability to control the body increases, and he can then get more confidence in being able to control it from a greater and greater distance. You see, he doesn't have to be smashed into it or buttered all over in the places where it might go and meeting it, coming and going, you might say. All right, so the next command is, you just would say to him then, all right, you'd face him around and you'd say, all right, now when I tell you start the body, start the body. And he would say, all right. And you'd say, all right, start the body. And he moves away from where we're standing there. And you say, that's fine. Now, you don't stop the body. You don't tell him stop. Get that point. All right, and then next. Third command on the thing is you ask the pre-clear to, you tell him, I'm going to ask you to get your body moving over there because it's toward that wall, you see. And as I, when we get it moving over there toward that wall, somewhere along the line, I'm going to say stop. And when I say stop, I want you to stop the body. Is that all right? And he says, that's right. It's all right with me. You say, all right, now, get it moving. You don't use start, stop, same thing. You say, get it moving. And he moves over there and you say, stop. And the pre-clear stops. And you say, good. Did you stop the body? And he says, yes. You turn him around, head him in the other direction, point the door, say, we'll have the body moving that direction this time. All right, and when I tell you, I'm going to tell you to start the body moving, and then I'm going to tell you to stop. See, a brand new contract every time, and he says, all right, and then he moves off and stops. All right, the final thing is here that the pre-clear will flatten each one of these things in turn. You may have to do it 60 times on change and 120 times on start and 50 times on stop, at which time you would run change again, don't you think? And you walk around with him and help him out, and he will feel the mimicry context of this. If you simply sit there and do it, he will eventually feel uncomfortable. And that is start, change, and stop.
This tape recording is copyright 1956 by the Hubbard Association of Scientologists International of Brunswick House, 83 Palace Gardens Terrace, London, West 8, United Kingdom. It is Reel 9 of the Hubbard Professional College Lecture Series of August 1956. Its title is Game Theory.
I'd like to talk to you today about game theory, the theory of games. Just why it is that games as a theory explains life, and a very, very large number of very fancy and very simple theories do not explain life, I refuse to be responsible for. The idea of games are nothing but games, and it never was anything but a game, and so on, evidently fills the bill. But the idea that all is love simply seems to fill somebody's coffers. The idea that it is a world of tooth and claw doesn't work. It isn't a world of tooth and claw. It's a world of games. And when games get so serious that everybody becomes entirely introverted into the game, he ceases to realize that it is a game, but nevertheless he is still mixed up in a game. We find a great deal of despair in a preacher over the fact that occasionally we find it, it's all pointless. You know, life really pointless. All he needs to do is have some purposes invented. But he will tell you that life is pointless. Well, he's telling you that somebody should come along and hand him a game, all tailor-made, done up properly, delivered across the counter of the toy store with no difficulty to himself. Life becomes pointless when an individual loses his ability or lays aside his ability to think up purposes. That's about all there is to it. And life, of course, is pointless. Because purposes are part of game theory. The parts of the game are very interesting. But the parts of the game are very quickly and briefly stated. And the first part of the game is, of course, freedom. And the next part of the game is barriers. And the next part of the game is purposes. And out from these three things, we actually get all parts of game. Well, there could be 1,000 reasons why life is being lived. There could be 1,000 patterns on which life is being constantly redesigned. But the one which delivers to us the best results, the one which stands the test, passes through the cauldron, is game theory. And none of the others do. Therefore, we have to know a great deal more about games than freedom, barriers, and purposes. We could say very happily, somebody, well, freedom, barriers, purposes. That's all there is to know about games. Well, very simple. Sometimes very simple things. Game theory. Well, it looked very simple to me the first day that I stumbled across this in calculation. It was merely put down in a list with 500 other possibilities, patterns. And they all had to be selected out. And when I said it, I put it down. That's too simple. And went on to the next one and paid no further attention to it. That's why it was examined as number 500. All of that stuff got tested first because they sounded so much better. Well, it's simple, all right. Very, very simple. So are the works and metallurgy of Big Ben. So is the instruction manual on how to keep legislation from becoming legislation after it's legislated. Because freedom, barriers, and purposes explains life. This is for certain, explains life. But none of the three will audit. You can't just say to somebody, well, get the idea, freedom. That's fine. I get the idea, Barry. That's fine. Can you build Barry? If you can, oh, that's fine. All right, now, do you have a purpose in life? And the fellow says, oh, yes, that's fine. And you say, all right, you're clear. It'd be very, very lovely if you could. It'd be wonderful if you could. But you can't. James Processing runs into every game that our free clear has been tossed out of. And runs into every activity he has ever engaged in. It runs into every purpose and thing he has ever dedicated himself to. When you start to process it, you're just processing head-on as far as the case is concerned. Crack! There are processes in game processing which I well imagine if run inexpertly would simply pick up the pre-clear and, well, you'd dust him off afterwards and maybe find enough pieces to put in the coffin, but even that has its sound. There's one process in game processing which is sufficiently rugged as to turn on the feeling of insanity in the pre-clear. If it's run on the right valence, no matter how expertly audited, it would still turn on, saying, meow, I'm going mad. And that is simply invent a way to get attention from valence. Now, that sounds like such an innocent process, doesn't it? Sounds like such a sweet, innocent process. There's obviously nothing under the sun could be more pleasant. Obviously, there's tension in somebody's mind. But let us take somebody like Father. In better way, get attention from Father. Meow. Now, if Father is the person in the family who is most out of communication, although apparently most in it, you know, Father might have been the person who was dramatizing sanity all the time, you know. And this process we're running on him, why we are likely to discover our free clear just sitting quietly in the chair. No, you have to lighten that process up. Invent something that would get Father's interest. And that runs. A little bit rough, but it runs. And only after that was flat could you run. Invent a way of getting Father's attention. So a pre-clear differentiates very, very closely between attention and interest. What a semantic difference. What a light difference to cause with one process a feeling of insanity and the other a feeling of relief. And so are all the buttons of games. Very precise buttons. Very precise buttons. We have be, do, and have. And those obviously are three conditions of existence. Nothing more obvious than this. The fourth condition, of course, would be attention. And as I just told you, games processes run a very, very fine line, a thin thread, because you're processing straight on into the complete background in life is frequent. And so we take just this little thing of attention, be, do, and have. And well, you know, none of them are processable directly on a pre-clear without considerable ramification. In other words, there is no process of which I am familiar which has in it do. Just as such. Like, what could you do? Invent something to do. Well, it just doesn't run. Doesn't run. Now, being this processing, we are well acquainted with, but we know that being this processing has its limitations. Definitely has its limitations. And as far as having this is concerned, you can have the pre-clear have something, but do you know that to have let anybody else have anything, the process becomes limited. You can have other things can't have. Look around the room and tell me something your mother can't have. But look around the room and tell me something your mother could have is liable to produce an apple. And the father's pre-clear. Now that's a very peculiar thing, isn't it? So you have all of these terribly precise, these terribly microscopic differentiations occurring in game processing. And having selected it out of a pre-computation of 500, there were 85 then possible elements of game. And these were selected out to find which of them were processable, and it was discovered that a bare 20 were processable, although the others were quite easy to understand how they fitted in games, but one couldn't process them. Quite remarkable when one begins to think of it. So the best that we can do, is to clarify every command with the preclear before we use it on the preclear. In other words, use that communication bridge. Terribly important thing, that communication bridge. And in no process, or no set of processes, is it more important than processing games. A communication bridge has three elements, actually. You actually come off of a bridge when you start processing. You haven't ended a process, but you're beginning one. So you make a contract with the preclear as to what command run. Well, actually, there's a center to the bridge, and you have that one, too. You come right off the center of the bridge. You're here, and I'm here, and we're auditing. And then we make the contract. We say, now is it all right with you if we run abracadabra bow hour? And then the preclear says, well, yes, I think that would be all right. Now, you sure if you know what's meant by abracadabra bow hour? And he says, yes. And, by the way, a very, very amusing story concerning this. An auditor testing this puppy to the rough technique, you know, was after he understood he was testing technique. And he ran a case for 50 hours on what your theta body can't have. And he started on the first day of processing and ran the preclear all morning on, look around and tell me something your theta body can't have. And he did a wonderful job of it, very smooth. And half the afternoon, and what your theta body can't have, just that one command, you see. And middle of the afternoon, the preclear looked at him and says, what is a theta body? Well, that merely tells us that the auditor omitted a communication bridge, you see. And here right at the beginning of the communication bridge, of course, we have the bridge between the two processes. We bring off the process we have been running and bring it to a stop on agreement. It's all right with you if after a few more times we conclude this process of what wouldn't you mind bashing your mother with? And he says, all right. Yes, that's all right with me. If you omit that, by the way, it's very unpleasant sometimes. You all of a sudden say, well, he's in the middle of the dope off or something. You say, well, end of session. Thud. You give him warning. And having ended this, then you say, doing chitter-chat, what you're really saying is you're here and I'm here and the room's here and we got that one flat. And now we go on and say, now, you know, I'd really like to run this process on you. And you give him the process and you sort it out that he knows what you mean by this process. And he does, and so you carry on from there. Well, this becomes very necessary, you see, in games processing, because words can mean different things to different people. Actually, not to the degree that a general semanticist would love to have you believe. But certainly, individuals have aberrated importances for certain words. And I've seen freaks there going up to the roof because somebody continued to use the word can't instead of can't. You know, I mean, they're touchy. You get somebody in the scientific lab. I imagine if you ever processed a nuclear physicist or if you processed a doctor of literature or something of this sort, you'd probably spend 50% of your time on the communication bridge. And arguing about what this word meant, that word meant, and so forth. You shouldn't pay too much attention to it. If he starts arguing, you shouldn't do it. You should just run some more FCS and get that out of the road. If you asked him to look out there in the street and tell you what was important out there in the street, he would look at the signs on the truck and on the shop, and he would tell you those were terribly important, the words, you see. And he would not see the trucks or the shops or the street. He would simply see the words. So, nevertheless, Even on a preclear who is not in the sixth condition on the subject of semantics, we have to be very careful in games processing. These words in games processing mean exactly what they mean. They are the dictionary definition of these words. They are also words which are in common usage, and they are very commonly understood. And it's amazing, and it really shouldn't be since we're on the exact center of aberration, the agreement on exactly what these words mean is much better than on any other words in the English language. Nevertheless, we must be careful that we and the preclear and the auditor understand exactly what is going forward. Now, these do and have become, in game processing, three other things. They become individuality, not even identity. They become individuality, that's B. B becomes problems. And have, as far as processable processes are concerned, in the majority of cases, becomes can't have. So much for your conditions of existence. And I've already pointed out to you that attention, which should be the fourth condition, becomes interest. And that's amazing. Now, therefore, the processes which are given must be given in a complete understanding of the list of game's conditions. What are the elements of games to the auditor? Now, there might be one thing to the cricketer. There might be one thing to the football coach. There might be another thing to somebody who is going out to do and die for dear old Mugwump you. But the very, very strange thing is they don't mean anything else in Scientology but what they mean. And that meaning is exactly which of these processes work on cases and which doesn't. We are fanatics, I've been told. We are fanatics. You know, you realize that? We have a terrible fixation. I've been told that. We insist on working with things that work. Psychoanalyst told me that, but we're absolute fanatics. We insist on using things that improve people or that do things to people. I began to understand after a while that he was a fanatic on something else. He was a fanatic on things that didn't do anything to people. This fanaticism, however, we get from a long, whole track background of engineering. And when we go out and step in a car or aboard a horse, we expect the thing to run, you know. We really, those of us, this actually is one of the things that limits the population of Scientologia, because it collects those people in the society which are capable of solving problems. There aren't many of them. Most people simply want the problem obsessively, and they want no solutions to the problem. So these are the workable buttons. Now, you could write something up if you didn't want it to work. I mean, if he was, after all, paying you 50 guineas an hour and you saw every chance of carrying the case on for the next 3 years, you better write up another list. All right. Now I'm going to read you rapidly this list without any further ado. The first is of under game's condition, knowing or unknowing, is not know. That is a game's condition, not know. There is some knowingness mixed up, of course, in any game, but it is a fleeting knowingness for the duration of the game. Satan is in the total knowingness band, is he? But unless he limits his knowingness very markedly, he can't play a game, and he has to limit his knowingness down to a point of where he is not knowing the better part of what he knows and the universe in order to play a game at all. And not know, therefore, is dominant in games over know by a ratio of about 8 billion to 1. There is some knowingness, you see, but not much. So the best football players I've ever known have been the most stupid oaks you ever saw. True government, too. Now, a shadow of that has some limited, all but very limited workability, is forget. So the important thing is not know. It's harmonic, and shadow is forget. You don't process forget much more, but if you do have to run a recall process, for heaven's sake, run a forgetting process. What wouldn't you mind forgetting, you know?
By the way, we'll jump more cases than you would really care to classify. Now, if opposite, which is a no-games condition, knowingly and unknowingly, is, of course, no, with its little harmonic, remember. Knowing isn't a games condition. The proof of that is simply you ask some preacher, what wouldn't you mind knowing? And he spins in very quietly. Now, remembering, all the way up and down the track, is also reversal on a games condition, and will soon put him over on a motionless spot from the track. And he will feel very sad indeed. Now, a man who is in too much turmoil can be asked, what wouldn't you mind remembering, or remember something that is really real to you? And he's liable to move over from a commotion to a null spot. And this is a great relief for him. It works once. Well, the moment he answers this thing and says, oh, boy, that really feels better. Lay off the process. Because you ask it two more times and you've undone your own magic. You throw it into a death or something. In other words, it's terribly limited. But that's true of all of these no-games conditions. They're very limited. There's only one technique that works on them uniformly, and even that has some unworkabilities, and that's running consequences. Consequences, the continuance of the problem. So, just to go over the rest of the list here, we discover the games conditions, knowing and unknowing, are not know, forget, interest, disinterest, attention, self-determinism, identity, individuality. It runs as individuality. Problems, can't have, games do have some havingness. The individual himself, a Satan, can have in the game, and that is the game's condition. Alive, opponents, facsimiles, continued solidity, continued adherence, loyalty, disloyalty, betrayal, and help, these are all buttons that work. Motion, emotion, continued action, hot, cold, thinking, hate, some love, continued doubt of results, which, by the way, has a very amusing harmonic. It's expecting a revelation. It's a continued doubt of result, as you say. Now, somebody will sit there all the way through an intensive expecting a revelation. And it actually just sums his case entirely. You find him back doing a vigil over armor in a chapel or something. Now, by far, the most violent of the processes is, it's a fascinating condition. No effect on self and effect on others. That's fantastic, but it means a games condition is no effect on self and effect on others. You reverse it, it goes into a no games condition. We always think of games as some little effect on us and effect on the opponent, you know. That's not a games condition. It works out to be no effect on self and effect on others. Stop communication, change communication, into it as opposed to out of it. Into it is a games condition, out of it is a no-game condition. Although you can run some out of it, as long as you don't get out of the game. Agitation, noise, and of course some silence. That's very spooky, having a game of silences. Control, start, change, and stop. Change is the most important of these, and responsibility. Those are all games conditions. The oddity is responsibility obviously belongs there, but it doesn't process. Now, the no-games conditions are, with great rapidity, no, remember, no attention, pan-determinism, namelessness, solutions, have, neither alive nor dead, friends, alone, no pictures or universes, no spaces or solids, no enemies or friends, no motion, serenity, motionlessness, no temperature, knowing, as opposed to thinking, win, lose, no-games conditions, win, lose, effect on self, no effect on others, no ARC, No ARC, ARC, out of it, calm, silence, no control, and no responsibility. And those are the no-game conditions. And none of them process except on one button only, and that's consequences. You can run the consequences of those conditions. Now, this is game theory. Life is game, and there are certain basic elements that are more important than others. And an auditor tries to run out of the case the games he has been in, because all games are aberrative. Also, if you want to get bored to death, engage in no games. You will notice that a no-game condition list is the truth. If you try to process the truth out of a Satan, you'll get him nowhere, because he is truth. And all those conditions which are under no-game conditions are truth. Therefore, what you process on a case are lies. Your games conditions are all lies. And when you run these, you raise an individual's tolerance for these things. You run out the agitation of old games, and you win as consequence. But when you run him on truth, you simply stick him all over the track. because the harmonic, untrue, is what is wrong with the thing. You can say ably that anything wrong with a person is because he didn't tell enough lies when he was young. And so we have games conditions and no games conditions, and so we have game theory.